Oh, yeah, just like a heat wave. That's what we get around here in Tampa Bay. A little bit of a heat wave with Martha and the Vandellas. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Good morning. It is Monday, May the 1st. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy. And along with Big Ed Davis, we thank you for being with us on this May Day. May Day. It's like, help, May Day. But indeed, that's what it is. We have a lot going on today. We'll be talking in a few minutes with William Yeatman, he of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're going to talk about the Trump battle to stop Barack Obama's clean power plan. They see it as a huge federal overreach. And I think you're going to find it very interesting. Also, Trump promises that this new health care bill that they're formulating will cover pre-existing conditions. But the Republicans say, not so fast on that. So who's telling the truth? We're going to talk about it. And a stopgap spending bill has passed Congress. But guess what? We don't have any border wall money in it. No money cuts to sanctuary cities. What's going on there? We'll talk about that. And Democrats say they now know why Hillary Clinton lost. We're going to find out the secret, if indeed there is one. So stay tuned for that. And in our ultimate top 10 list, the top 10 best allies of the United States. Do you think you know who they are? You may be surprised. So stick around for that. By the way, we're sponsored in part by the best barbershop for you men in Tampa Bay. It's located in Clearwater on State Road 580 in the Columbia Plaza. It's called Andrew's Master Barbershop. Once you get in there, he's got you because you're going to love the haircut he gives you. And the price, oh my goodness. You'd think it's 1958 when you go in there and look at the prices. Wait till you get there. Now, they're located on State Road 580, just west of the Countryside Mall. Look for the yellow sign with the red letters Columbia Plaza. They're not open today, but Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. And also, get to our website, you people. Anytime that you want to hear any of our shows, Big Ed has set it up on our website. Look for the podcast button at the top, ourfreedomworks.com. Ourfreedomworks.com. Well, I think a lot of people are wondering if a lot of the things Donald Trump promised to do, he's going to do. Now, one thing he promised was the wall, and the other thing was we're going to cut sanctuary city money. But right now, we've got a temporary, I guess, stopgap spending bill. It's a temporarily, it's going to spend over $1 trillion to fund our government. Let's do this. Let's not fund the government except for, you know, them having to mail out the Social Security checks and things like that. What else is the government doing we have to spend money on? I'm starting to worry that there isn't too much. And maybe I'm really naive about this, but are you like me? When you hear that the government might shut down, you secretly go, yeah, baby. Anyway, both the Republicans and the Democrats forged a $1.07 trillion spending package. It keeps us open till the end of September, but does not include money for a border wall or funding cuts to sanctuary cities. So we're going to put that on the back burner, apparently. Now, Donald says, look, we're going to get it done. Don't worry about it. Not coming as quickly as I would have wanted. Trump chided the Republicans a little bit for not getting a lot of their stuff through that he promised. Now, he said at nearly every campaign stop last year, Mexico was going to pay for a border wall. You know, they shouldn't call it a wall because it ain't going to be a wall in a lot of places. It'll be a barrier. It might be a fence. But it won't be one of these, you know, you can't see through it brick or stone walls. But And he wants to take money that either Mexico owes us or we've got already from Mexico and use it towards the wall. But this thing is out of this particular spending package. And the other thing is sanctuary cities. There's no money in there that would help fund trying to stop cities that declare themselves sanctuary cities from harboring the bad illegal immigrants that they might have in town. So that's where it is, and that means that they've caved a little bit to some of these Democrats. Here's Chuck Schumer, who's the leader of the Democrats these days in the Senate. He says, this bill ensures money is not used to fund an ineffective border wall. It excludes poison pill riders and increases investments in programs that the middle class relies on, like medical research, education, and infrastructure. I never liked the word investments. It means taxes, more money out of your pocket, investments. Nancy Pelosi, who somehow is still the House Minority Leader, echoed Schumer's praise, saying, the omnibus bill does not fund Trump's immoral and unwise border. How can it be immoral? Jeez. One day she's going to take a smart pill. She's been reaching in the cabinet and getting the blue pills. Those are the dumb pills, Nancy. Go to the red pills. You're taking the blue pills. So anyway, we got a temporary funding bill, and I guess it's a good thing. We'll see what happens. Anyway, let us do this. We are going to take our break, and when we come back, William Yeatman of the Competitive Enterprise Institute.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
There's only one place on the radio where golfers like you can turn for the best tips, interviews, product reviews, local tournaments, and everything golf talk. The Golf Show, guys.
Hey, join the Golf Show, guys, every Wednesday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's not just funny, it's informative, it's celebrities, and it's a lot of applause. It's the Golf Show Guys, Wednesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angel Wolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tantalk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on May Day, May the 1st. Delighted to have back William Yeatman of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where he is a senior fellow and does a lot of work when it comes to environmental issues. And, William, we have something called the Clean Power Plan. Sounds really, really nice. However, CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, is not a big fan of it. Will you tell us why, and then secondly, what's going on with it?
You bet. The Clean Power Plan was President Obama's marquee climate regulation. It would overhaul the way we've regulated electricity for 100 years and instead subsume the whole electric industry under the thumb of the EPA. This is a terrible idea for any number of reasons. For one, you know, its a valid purpose is to affect climate change, but it wouldn't do so at all. I'm a climate change skeptic, so I mean that's dismiss that at the outset.
No problem.
But more importantly, it entails, you know, huge costs and also, again, this kind of a tremendous shift in the way we go about the electric business. You know, to date, since really the FDR administration, states have been in charge of deciding what sort of electricity sources they want to use. The result of the Clean Power Plan would have been that EPA assumed that control.
Yeah.
They've got no expertise in electricity.
So this is a huge federal overreach, and I'm going to quote you. You said this about it. In the wake of the court's order, we expect the agency to bring this plan within the bounds of the law, allowing for two things. One, the rule is negated because the EPA determines it is precluded from issuing a climate rule because there are already a regulation being, they are already regulated under the Clean Air Act's Hazardous Air Pollution Program. And then secondly, the EPA significantly revises the rule to bring it inside the line of electricity generating units such that the agency no longer claims the authority to dictate to the states. In other words, they, you know, don't go into the state's area of influence. Is that right?
Exactly. And, okay. I must apologize for my garbled prose.
No, not at all. I garbled it reading it. I apologize to you.
It was a run-on sentence. So what that refers to, just last week, the D.C. Circuit, in effect, allowed the Trump administration to go about revising or rescinding this Clean Power Plan, which was finalized late in the Obama administration, as opposed to what the Greens and certain attorneys general, for example, the ones from California and New York, had been pushing, which was to have the Obama-packed court render a decision. In essence, render it a decision that says, hey, this is legal, this is fine, there's nothing to worry about. Now, that wouldn't have gotten in the way of the Trump administration's authority to revise or rescind the rule. I mean, basically, whatever one administration can do administratively, a subsequent president can undo or, you know, change or do more of. However, had the court rendered that determination, basically giving its imprimatur of legality to what the Obama administration had done, it would have been a PR nightmare. I mean, the Greens would have crowed about it to the moon. And it just would have made...
In other words, if it's already in effect, it's very easy to demagogue trying to get rid of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If the argument... So what you when you were reading out the run-on sentences of that press release, what I was alluding to is what this administration is likely to do is to say, whoa, the previous administration went way out of bounds. I mean, they were counting on judicial deference to stretch the law far past its breaking point. We want to bring it within the bounds of what the agency has always done, as opposed to, you know, reordering the whole economy in the furtherance of climate change mitigation. So that argument is common sense,
yeah.
And it ultimately would have prevailed no matter what. But rhetorically speaking, it becomes more difficult to make if an Obama-packed court lends its approval to, you know, the Obama administration's statutory interpretation.
Yeah.
So we dodged a bullet. And it's as it should be. I mean, this is a not uncommon phenomenon when there's presidential changeovers. Obama did the same thing when he took the reins of power from Bush. If the previous guy has done a bunch of regulations that you disagree with, and because the wheels of justice are slow, they're currently before courts, you don't have to defend them.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to, you know, you can say, court, we're rethinking this. Please give us the authority or give us the time to do so. So that's what took place. And again, I as the the press release alluded to, I firmly expect that they're going to revise or rescind this rule. They're either going to say, we don't have the authority to do this at all, or they're going to say, sure, we'll issue a climate rule, but we're going to issue a climate rule within the bounds of the law, which is, you know, 1% of of the climate rule of the Obama administration issued, you know, in terms of impact. I mean, they're not going to try to take over the entire electric industry is what I'm getting at.
Sure. We're talking with William Yeatman. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, has a lot of knowledge on environment and all of these efforts to bring about some sort of effort with climate change or not bring it about. You know, speaking of climate change, William, it's way down the list of what Americans are concerned about, kind of at the bottom. And I don't know that the Democrats have been banging the drum too terribly. I know that every once in a while they'll mention it in line with a bunch of other things that they think Donald Trump is doing wrong. But do you get the sense that people are buying into this thing about climate change? I mean, really about the fact that man is really causing, is a direct cause of temperature warming?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's twofold. One, there's skepticism that we know that mankind has definitively, you know, solved the trillions of biotic and abiotic interactions that go into the phenomenon that we refer to as the climate. On the other hand, there's also a widespread skepticism that over the doomsday scenarios that are constantly put forth by so-called global warming alarmists, which, you know, the NRDCs, the Sierra Clubs, the Senator Sheldon Whitehouses of the world. So, yeah, just specifically to this point, I can say that Gallup polling, you know, they do this recurring poll where they ask Americans, well, list your top 20, or, you know, out of these 20 priorities that we list, and global warming is included in there, so are jobs, so is national defense, and et cetera, you know, rank them. And every single time global warming is 20th out of 20.
Yes,
Note here, the best possible evidence that global warming is a political loser and is something that the Democrats won't touch is President Obama's 2012 reelection campaign. If your listeners, I believe I've told them this before, so I'll keep it super short.
Sure.
But he wouldn't touch global warming with a 10-foot pole. That Obama was running to the right of Romney on energy. If your listeners will remember, the second debate occurred in Denver. That Obama, the one who was trying to get elected by the American people, was pro-oil, was pro-gas, and he was even pro-coal. I mean, you can check the transcript.
I believe
debate.
You. Yeah.
I wrote a bunch of blog posts about it. But the upshot is, it was only after he gained a second term, no longer facing electoral accountability, that he pivoted hard to the climate issue. And I think you see it in 2016 as well. Hillary Clinton wasn't speaking about climate change. I mean, she mentioned it at one event in Florida. You know, so I guess the proof is in the pudding. The fact is that the only American politician who's ever somewhat run on climate change is the current president. And he said it was a hoax. And he got elected.
So, he did, indeed.
I mean, the evidence, you know, suggests that it's not.
So even if they believe it, Americans don't consider it a big thing. I mean, we're not too worried yet that the polar ice caps are going to melt or that we're losing polar bears or that here in Florida, every once in a while, I'll see people talk about the level of the Atlantic Ocean is going, since we're, you know, just about at sea level here, is going to go up. And that means, you know, we have visions here of the Atlantic shallow water crossing over the interstate or something. I mean, it seems like, you know, and nobody, but I don't see anybody really buying into that.
It is, well, I mean, if I might put such fears to rest.
Yeah.
Are the scientific consensus is that we would see, a foot and a half? I mean, I think it's 19 inches, 19 to 21 inches of, or maybe I'm getting the metrics mixed.
No, I know what you're saying. By a certain day, we were going to be using water wings to cross over sidewalks.
Yeah, we were. It was a comparison of what I was trying to get at, and I'm sorry, it may be centimeters, but I'll check and I'll send it to you, the email. But the point
is,
over the last 150 years, we experienced 16 units. It's either inches or centimeters, I don't know which one. And over the next 100 years, we're supposed to experience 21. So it just strikes me, and that's our best guess. I mean, if it wasn't a catastrophe, you know, during the last 150 years of industrialization, I'm not quite sure why it's supposed to be a catastrophe in the next 100 years.
Yeah. Do you remember, are you old enough to remember when it was we were going to have an ice age problem because of man's involvement. It used to be, it wasn't global warming. Now it's called climate change, by the way. But it started out that we were being scared to death that man was making the planet colder. And these scientists were just as sincere about that then as they seem to be now with making it warmer.
And it wasn't just, if I might, let's get historical here. It wasn't just global cooling. We also had Paul Ehrlich running around telling everyone about the population bomb, how it was going to ruin the environment because there was too many people.
Oh, yeah. That's been going on since the 50s.
Since abated.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had concerns about John Holdren, who was President Obama's science advisor. Before there were concerns about global warming, and then before there were concerns about global warming, there was concerns about global cooling that you just mentioned. And then before that, there was concerns from John Holdren that the radiation emanating from nuclear power plants, because, you know, big anti-nuclear is a knee-jerk reaction amongst these people, that would cause global warming. There's ecocide, that was a fad in the 70s. Resource depletion, that was another fad in the mid-70s. I mean, there's a constant theme here, which is environmentalists latch on to the latest fad, of doomsday fad, if you will, and the only solution every single time, coincidentally, or not coincidentally, is centralized control of the entire economy.
Exactly, and I was just going to get back to this clean power plan case, because if you leave concerns like that in the hands of the states, first of all, I think more is done. They have a more direct involvement in pollution and in all of the other things. They're in their own state, and they're more directly responsible to the people. So they have a dog in the fight much more than, you know, those people in Washington. So this clean power plan and the CEI's attempts to kind of, you know, get the overreach over with, you're really trying to move it back to a large extent to the states, right?
Of course, and that's the way it's supposed to work. I mean, again, that's the way it's worked for 80 years. And you're exactly right. This notion, if I may do a brief anecdote on
what you
spoke of, sort of the imbalance of federal power or federal to state power on these environmental issues during the Obama administration, the most aggressive action that the EPA can take vis-a-vis a state is known as a Federal Implementation Plan, or a FIP. A FIP is an outright usurpation of state power. EPA basically says, get out of the way, we're coming in here, and we're going to regulate these sources on our own. Indicative of how sensitive and how important and how consequential these FIPs are, the three presidents prior to Obama, so George H.W. Bush, Clinton, George W. Bush, promulgated their EPAs, a total of five of these regulatory takeovers of state programs. During the Obama administration, they promulgated, the EPA did, 55 of these things. So 11 times the sum of the three previous presidents combined. That's the sort of centralization of control, centralization of authority that environmentalists have long been pushing for. And yes, that's what we're pushing back against. The Clean Power Plan would have only been the consummation of all that activity. I mean, it would have been sort of the end game, if you will. We're litigating against it. We're actually participating in the court battle that we just scored a victory on. We're working tooth and nail against it.
Yeah, that's great.
Trying to influence.
You know, the funny thing was, too, Obama then wants to go and have the world start setting one-size-fits-all climate policy. And that's even harder to do. And, of course, all of the major countries are ignoring those things anyway. I mean, let's be honest, you know.
Exactly.
So it's just I'm delighted that the Competitive Enterprise Institute's kind of standing guard with all of that. Thank you so much. And, William, it's always a pleasure to talk
Thank
with
you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. We'll talk with you soon.
All right, take care.
All right. There he goes, William Yeatman of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, Democrats claim they know why Hillary lost to Donald Trump, and we're going to find out why.
Wonder I can think at all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Let's go bowling!
Let's go bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why don't you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back on this May 1st. I want to remind you, we are sponsored in part by the best place to get a haircut, you men, in the Tampa Bay area, Andrew's Master Barbershop. It's located in Clearwater. It's actually right on the line, if you're familiar with the area, on 580 between Dunedin and Clearwater. But we call it Clearwater. It's just west of the Countryside Mall and just west of Highway US 19. So you get into the Columbia Plaza, and there he is. Now you look for the yellow sign, Columbia Plaza, with the red letters, and you'll pull in. He's right in the center. Best haircut you can get. Prices like you'd think it's back in the 50s. Very inexpensive. Great haircut. You'll be so pleased. They're open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Well, speaking of May Day, immigrant rights and union groups, among those marching in cities across the country today, they're protesting against Trump's efforts to boost deportations. Immigrants and their allies are expected to be in New York, Chicago, L.A., Seattle, demonstrating. Also a lot of smaller cities down here in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, out west in Portland. They want people to skip work, skip school, skip their shopping, to highlight the importance of immigrants in American communities. Well, you know, it's always making it sound like people that want the borders protected don't like immigrants. Are you kidding? There's no country that's been friendlier to immigrants. We just would like to know who the hell's coming in. That's all. But here's Angelica Salas. The message we want to send Donald Trump is that we're united. When he thinks that immigrants are isolated and that others will not stand up for our immigrant communities, he's wrong. You know, they're arguing one thing, and Americans are doing another. I don't understand. While union members traditionally march on May the 1st, you know, in Russia, it's always that big May Day thing that's been going on for years, right? While union members traditionally march May 1st for workers' rights in countries around the world, it's now become a rallying point for immigrants in the U.S. Well, this is just, you know, it's the same old thing. It's like, are you really just rallying for open borders and for people to come pouring in and we don't know who the heck they are? Kind of dumb. All right.
See, I had a thought on the wall.
Oh, well, take the thought off the wall and verbalize it, sir.
Well, we made it out all out of plexiglass. Then they wouldn't see it. You know, like a bird flies into a window?
Yeah.
Okay, so they wouldn't see it. Okay, and if some spots weren't finished, they wouldn't know.
That's a good idea.
Just make it all plexiglass, well, you know.
Yeah. Or how about a mirror? That way, when they see when they see it, they'll go the other way.
Then you're gonna blind somebody or burn them, with the sun and everything.
So that won't work.
No.
Okay.
Just plexiglass. They won't be able to see it.
Oh, I even have a better idea. Remember the old drive-in movies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just one big long movie. It's just we'll build a thing, but it's a movie screen.
Well, we don't want to entertain them.
Okay.
We just want them to go away.
I see.
Or turn around.
So you like the plexiglass idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's probably a lot cheaper, but is it that sturdy?
Well, how sturdy does it have to be? I mean, it's just going to be a couple guys trying to get over it. You know, they only weigh, 125 pounds?
Well, I'm thinking of some guy coming along with a sledgehammer and by whacking it a few times.
No, they don't.
The whole thing, crack.
You know, they don't carry a whole lot when they're running.
That's true.
They're just got the clothes on their back and the muchachas that they're bringing across.
Ed, you know what your problem is?
What?
You're too practical.
Well,
plexiglass is much too practical.
Mm-hmm.
Isinglass. Do you remember Isinglass? You know what that is?
No.
Isinglass, you remember the old convertibles? And they were cloth convertibles. And you remember that the window in the back was sort of a plastic?
Mm-hmm.
It was really called Isinglass. They used it actually when I was a little boy in Stagecoach. No, I'm just kidding. I went around then. But Isinglass has been around a long time. So what we do is we have Isinglass borders. Now, I think that would work.
Well, that wouldn't be strong enough, though.
It'll look good, though.
But the wind would knock it over.
Anyway, I guess, they're still worried about how they're going to do this thing in Washington. Do you really think do you think they're really going to build a wall all the way across?
I think they are.
These
people that are saying that he's not following through on his promises.
He's trying to.
Where did he promise that he was going to take care of North Korea in the first 100 days?
Oh, of course. But you know what? Uh-huh. These people don't like him anyway. It wouldn't make any difference if he did it in the first week.
I mean, what if he put the wall?
You're waiting for them to give him their stamp of approval. You're going to...
What if he put the wall in front of dealing with North Korea or healthcare?
Right.
Then he'd be, it'd be like,
priorities are out of whack.
Exactly. Well, you can't have too many irons in the fire.
No. And look, people have bought into what he wants to do. And here's why Hillary Clinton possibly lost.
Mm.
Maybe because, number one, she didn't agree with the things that Donald wanted, whereas the electorate did. But here's a group of top Democratic Party strategists have come up with new data about the race to reach a startling conclusion about why Hillary lost. Now they just apparently need to persuade the rest of the party. Many Democrats have this shorthand explanation that her base did not turn out and that Donald Trump's did. But these people say new info shows Hillary had a much bigger problem. The people that voted for Barack Obama back in 2012 didn't necessarily like Hillary and decided to vote for Donald Trump. Well, we know that already, right? Mm-hmm. Those Obama/Trump voters effectively accounted for more than two-thirds of the reason Clinton lost, according to the guy that is SVP, Senior Vice President, of a political firm called Global Strategy Group. In this guy's group's analysis, about 70% of Hillary's failure to reach Obama voters was because to reach Obama's vote total 4 years ago was because she lost these voters. Well, of course, we know that. Are they paying this Global Strategy Group to tell everybody that? But these people, the Global Strategy Group, have apparently delivered a detailed report of their findings to senators, congressmen, fellow operatives, and think tank wonks in the Democratic Party. I'm sure they could go running into the office and say, hey, hot off the press, here's what happened. The people that voted for Obama didn't necessarily vote for Hillary, and that's why she lost. Now pay me $825,000 mm-hmm. because of my consulting work. Here's another reason I think she lost. What message did she really bring out? I guess you could say, I'm going to raise the minimum wage and we're going to try to give you more benefits, those of you that are on welfare programs, I guess. I don't know. I mean, what was it that was her What was the core of her message? Nobody could seem to verbalize what she really wanted to do when she became president, other than, hey, I'm here. And, you know, all of these platitudes that are, at least with Donald Trump, you knew what he wanted to do. You could dislike him, but it was the same way with Reagan. Reagan said, here's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to cut spending. And if I cut spending and you have more of your money, the truth is that what more income is available for not only for people out in the private sector, but since you keep your money and you buy more things, that increases other people's employment, and that actually in the long run means there is more tax revenue.
I think one of the downfalls at the end was she bought into those bogus polls that were out showing her way ahead. And, you know, like Pennsylvania, I mean, that was a big, big disappointment. But, you know, close to election time, I drove through Pennsylvania where she was supposed to have this big lead.
You didn't see that, did you?
All I saw were Trump signs.
Yeah, exactly.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. So where are they getting these polls from? And I didn't just drive through one town. I mean, I did through half of Pennsylvania.
And if you had driven through Wisconsin and Michigan, you would have seen the same thing.
That's what I was hearing. But, of course, these polls were saying, oh, she's way out in front. And I think she took her foot off the gas, too.
I think she did. But, I if you can't verbalize why you should be president, you know, your base is going to go, well, why should I stand in line for an hour and wait to vote? Whereas with Obama, people got energetic, riled up, you know, big changes coming. They felt that they felt something there. But not with her. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like every time I think of the Democratic Party, I see it's like rubble after World War II to a German city. There's nothing standing there.
Just a little smolder of smoke coming up.
It's a puff of smoke going up towards the sky. That's about it, you know? What do they have? First of all, who do they have that they can get excited about that's going to run? Everybody's over the age of 80 that ran last
time. Right, yeah.
They're all going to be dead I shouldn't say this, but I mean, a lot of them will be in nursing homes.
Or there'll be a chief justice, you know, something like that.
Well, they will be.
Nobody in the Supreme Court.
Hey, maybe they can run.
They can't remember what they had for breakfast.
Well, maybe Ginsburg, who's now on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, could be their presidential. She could retire and then become the presidential nominee at the ripe old age of 91. Now, what do you think about that? That'd be wonderful.
Hmm.
Anyway, they don't have anybody, and they don't have a message. And you know what? When you don't have a message and you don't have anybody, Donald Trump looks really good. Really, really good. Okay, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this tax plan a little bit more. We're going to talk about Baltimore, where they're now asking for the FBI's help because crime is so bad. And we're going to tell you what the top 10 best American allies are.
Yeah, he's big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thank you for joining us. May 1st. Already, huh? A lot of spring cleaning going on, I suspect, around the country at this point. Or at least people are thinking about it. I don't know how much they're doing. You know, one person that really likes this tax plan that the Trump administration unfurled last week is the head of IBM, Ginni Rometty. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, or Rometty. Ginni said Sunday that America needs this revamp of its tax system. This plan, by the way, would roll back the corporate tax rate from 35%, which it is at right now, to 15%. And it would simplify individual income tax rates. It would also give people the standard deduction, you know. They're going to double it. Now, that'll be helpful, the standard deduction that you get. Now, the thing is that it's so simple that it's scary because people in Washington who always have a dog in the fight to keep certain things will probably rally against it. But as far as IBM goes, they like it. You know, President Trump has been saying things that maybe the Republicans in Congress are not necessarily agreeing with when it comes to this new health care plan he wants to roll out. He said those with pre-existing conditions, medical conditions, will be covered under the new Republican plan. He tweeted, health care plan is on its way. We'll have much lower premiums and deductibles while at the same time taking care of pre-existing conditions. However, House Republicans appear to allow the states to decide whether or not pre-existing conditions will be in there. And if they don't want to include it, they don't have to. So that kind of goes against what Trump is promising. But remember, Trump's a bit of a populist. Pre-existing conditions, someone's got to pay for a person that comes onto a health plan that, let's say, has a disease or a condition that requires continued medical help. Somebody's got to pay for it. And the idea behind insurance companies was that if you worked for a company, no matter if you had a pre-existing condition or not, you got the health care, right? So, but that was spread out among hundreds of thousands of people, the cost, which made it easier. But if you start just pulling everybody in with a pre-existing condition, they're the ones that'll want to sign up for the plans, more so than other people, let's be honest, and especially younger, healthier people who will not sign up. And you're going to have the same problem that you got now with Obamacare. The sick people are signing up and the healthy people are not. They don't want to pay the rates. So the pre-existing condition thing, Mr. Trump, is going to be a problem. We push here for free market, non-federal government intrusion into healthcare, and allowing the states to set up plans when it comes to people with pre-existing conditions. And if they decide not to, you know, that's up to them. Ed, when you were up there, you were talking about you were in Pennsylvania. You went to Baltimore. Weren't you in Baltimore recently, or am I wrong?
Yes.
You were, okay. Did you know that Baltimore's mayor is asking for the FBI to come in?
No, it's a mess there.
It's a mess. The city is, the murder rate is getting so bad there that she called on the FBI. She pulled no punches when she said the murder rate is out of control. Well, remember, the police there decided to back off after all of the complaints. Remember all of that?
Yeah, I remember the woman, I can't remember her name, the mayor that was
mayor
there.
Mayor is Pugh, P-U-G-H. What's her first name? Catherine Pugh is her name. P-U-G-H.
I just remember her, you know, when the looting was going on, she got in front of the press and said, we're going to let them finish doing what they're doing or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's, it gave them free reign to just,
it was,
you know,
about the dumbest thing America could have said.
She should have been removed right after that.
And she lost the confidence of the police department.
Exactly. And that's where
it's happened in New York, too. You know, the police in New York are feeling the same way with de Blasio.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So here she is calling. She says, I'm calling on all the assistance we can get because I can't imagine going into our summer month with our crime rate where it is today. What's that going to look like, she said, by the end of the summer? And she wants manpower, apparently, and technology from the FBI. So she wants them to come walking into Baltimore.
Fine, so, we'll walk in, you walk out.
Exactly. Well, people are walking out. You know, nobody's going to want to live in an area with crime and infestation. If they got the money to get the hell out, they're getting the hell out. So stupid, you know? You gotta allow the police to do the job that they were supposed to do. When you start stopping them from doing their job or blaming them, this is what happens. So good luck to Baltimore. Going to turn into Venezuela, which, by the way, is a great way to bring up my story about Venezuela, where, thanks to communism, everything has gone wrong. Their president hiked wages 60%. He just decided to raise their wages 60%, okay? Handed out hundreds of free homes. This is yesterday. Amid his efforts to keep from being executed by the people to counter a strengthening protest movement that wants him to get the hell out of Dodge. He has a TV show, by the way. Did you know he was a mailman or something before he became the president of Venezuela? That's really good background, isn't it? Anyway, he's got a...
Whoa. What happened?
He used to be a mailman. They elected him president.
Okay. All right.
He must have delivered the mail very well.
Okay.
And he's got a TV show called Sundays with Maduro. Isn't that great?
Mm.
On the program, he ordered a 60% increase in their minimum wage starting today. And this is the third pay increase that the socialist leader has ordered this year. Small solace, however, since their inflation forecast to accelerate to 2,000% next year means that with this 60% increase, you'll be able to buy half a loaf of bread once a week. With the latest wage increase and mandatory food subsidies, the minimum take-home pay for people now stands at 200,000 bolivars a month. Those good old bolivars. Or less than $50 a month if you use American money. So that's what's happening in Venezuela. We're laughing, and it's very sad. I mean, people are starving to death there. I mean, it's really, really, really bad. Finally, Donald Trump did not go to that correspondence dinner. We're all berserk with grief, aren't we, Ed? Because he should have been there and allowed everybody to take a pot shot at him while he sat in the audience, right? That's what we need, right? So it turns out he goes to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and draws more interest than the correspondence dinner did simultaneously. Ah, that's nice. Here's what the comedian that was doing the gig at the correspondent, his name is, I never heard of him, Hassan Minhaj. Have you heard of him?
No.
Of Comedy Central?
Mm-mm.
Here's what he said. We got to address the elephant that's not in the room. The leader of our country is not here, and that's because he lives in Moscow. It's a very long flight. As for the other guy, I think he's in Pennsylvania because he can't take a joke. He got a murmur. When I delivered the line better than he did.
Wow.
Okay? So they had a very, I guess the word is, what is it when everything is kind of muted?
Mm.
A very muted correspondence dinner. So that's all we care about for that. All right. It is time for a top 10, Ed. You got to get on the drum roll thing. And this is the top 10 best United States allies, okay? And Ed, I think you're probably going to guess right, but I'm going to let you try and guess who number one is when we get there, okay?
Okay.
All right, without further ado, number 10, the Philippines. Would you have bought into that? And guess who's here?
Oh, I thought they were complaining about
us. The Philippines is our top 10 best ally.
Hmm.
Guess who's here now in town? In town is this guy, Rodrigo Duterte, the Philippine president. He's been acting a little crazy over there, but he's in town to talk with Trump.
Gotcha.
So they're number 10, the Philippines. All right. Number 9. And I've just lost my place here. Number 9 is India. India's number 9.
Hmm.
Very good. Are you excited? You don't sound it.
No.
It's officially the Republic of India. It is a country that is... the seventh largest by area, and it is the second largest by population. So it's good to have a friend in India. Number 8. It's also good to have a friend in Germany. and they are our eighth best ally. Remember, the Germans always figure out a way to pick themselves up and dust themselves off and get industrial again. So never laugh at the Germans. Number seven. Every once in a while I laugh at France, but France has always been an ally ever since the Revolutionary War. They've been very, very close to us. Sometimes maybe they don't, you know, with their socialistic approach to life. I always think of Paris as people just sitting around doing nothing and drinking coffee. You ever get that that visual in your head?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Number six. Number six. Australia. They've always been a buddy. They've, you know, for a long time they were part of the whole dominion of Great Britain. But they're on their own. And they've been a big, big fan. They've, you know, always been involved in backing whatever our foreign policy has been. Okay, number five. These days, they better be an ally, South Korea, because they got that nutbag just north of them, and they need all the help they can get, and they want us. And, we, you know, we've been there ever since 1950, and we've been standing guard ever since 1953. At the DMZ, Demilitarized Zone. Number four. Another country I think it's good to be friendly with, Japan, is our fourth. Now, so as you all know, we didn't like them in World War II. But ever since, they have become a deep, deep friend of ours. And, you know, these people are very, you know, you live on an island and you're cut off from all kinds of, natural resources. These people have done amazing. You know, with what they have done. Okay, let's see. Where am I? Okay, number three. Israel. Israel, indeed. Mm. Our only real friend, I think, in the Mideast is probably Israel. You never know about the others. And that includes Saudi Arabia, which claims to be our friend. But they're our friend because we've been buying, for millennia, buying a lot of oil from them, right? Okay, number two. Our neighbors to the north, Canada. And that's not surprising that Canada is one of our closest allies. I would venture to say in many ways Canada is our best ally. And they share that huge border with us, and they've always been with us in just about everything. All right, Ed, what do you think is the number one best American ally?
Well, it's a jolly old England.
You are right, sir. Great Britain is indeed number one. It's closer to the USA than any other country. There are strong military interactions and frequent trading, and they've jolly well been our best friend. So there you go, my friends. All right. Have a wonderful Monday. Drive very, very safely, because we want to see you here again Wednesday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, when freedom works.